TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
All right, welcome in. Raised by Wolves here on Score North. Y'all knew Score North, scorenorth.com, the Score North mobile app. Manny Hill here with you and joining us from Las Vegas, where the NBA Summer League going on right now. Danny Cunningham, what's up, man?
Not much, man. Just enjoying fabulous Las Vegas, as the sign says.
Is it hot as hell out there? I imagine it has to be.
It's really not that bad. And honestly, most of the day, at least yesterday, and it's still the morning, the games haven't started quite yet here, but most of the day yesterday is spent inside the Thomas and Mack Center at UNLV, and it's air-conditioned. Like, it's not that bad. And then at night, when the sun's down, it's like 85, but it's perfect, actually.
Cool. All right. What do you got, man? I mean, you're out there. You've seen a little bit of everything, and Wolves obviously played a game yesterday against the Atlanta Hawks. What were some of your takeaways from what you saw in that game yesterday?
I think that both Kata Bates Diop and Josh Okogie have made real significant improvements. The one thing about Okogie that's really stuck out to me, and I think everyone noticed it last year, is just his nickname's nonstop, and he's always bringing energy, and he's always doing that, and sometimes that could be a detriment because he would get out of control and he would just end up doing things that actually hurt because he was trying to do too much. And I think that he's kind of corralled that in, at least in Summer League. He looks like he's in control more often than not, which is a little bit of a difference, in my opinion, from the regular season last year. The game has definitely slowed down for both him and Kata. Kata actually played some of the five yesterday, which I thought was interesting. He's going to have a bit of a tough time defending centers in the NBA, especially in the regular season. And Summer League, it won't be an issue. But at 6'9", 230, it will be tough for him when he's going up against real centers if they continue with this experiment. But that was something that certainly I thought was interesting about the game.
Anybody else step up to you that or stand out, I guess, that may have, you know, maybe outside chance that they may be turning some heads for the Wolves this summer?
I don't know where Jordan McLaughlin's going to be, but I do think that he's got a real chance to be an NBA player. He's been impressive. He's playing point guard for the Wolves during the Summer League, and it is easy, I will say that. It can be easier for some point guards to stand out in Summer League. Like, if you remember last year, Colin Sexton from Cleveland was awesome in the Summer League, but then when he got to the regular season, it was quite a different story. And if you have an idea of what you're doing at that position, it is easier to look good than at some other positions. But he's the next guy that isn't necessarily on the roster, might not make the team, but he has impressed me. Naz Reid really can move for a big man. I think that he's got a future in the league. He's on a two-way contract with the Wolves, so he's certainly someone to watch for as well.
Okay, so big news broke last night. I woke up to it this morning that Tyus Jones has apparently agreed to a 3-year, $28 million offer sheet with the Grizzlies. I am very hesitant to match on that if I'm the Wolves.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for a backup point guard, man. And I'm not sure where the Wolves are going to go on this, but if it were me, I would probably pass on matching it. As much as I like Tyus, I think that's a pretty hefty price for what you figure to be your backup point guard.
So that's the decision that they have to make, essentially. Is Tyus Jones the backup point guard, or is Tyus Jones going to be the starter? Because Jeff Teague's not part of this team's future. I think that's something that's pretty evident. As he enters the last year of his contract, his timeline doesn't match up with Karl-Anthony Towns. It would just be a surprise if Jeff Teague is either around after the trade deadline or two on the team next year. So you have to question, can Tyus Jones be the starting point guard of our future for the Wolves? And if the answer is yes, then you go and match that offer. But if not, then you have to let him walk. And it's something that a lot of fans might not like because Tyus is a Minnesota kid and he's a very likable person. He is a solid young point guard. But if you don't view him as the starting point guard and you're already in this situation financially, it's tough to see them paying him that amount of money to be the backup.
It's kind of an interesting play by Memphis too, right? I mean, they just drafted Ja Morant, and Ja Morant is going to be the point guard of the future for them. If the Wolves decide to pass on matching that deal, I mean, that's Tyus would be a pretty expensive backup point guard for a team that's rebuilding right now, albeit the deal is only for 3 years.
Yeah, he certainly would be, but Memphis, I think, is in a much different situation financially than the Wolves, where they can swing this. So I don't necessarily think I would want to pay Tyus Jones that much money, but the Grizzlies are in a little bit different of a situation, and we do see so often now where two-point guards can be on the floor at the same time. Maybe they feel playing Ja Morant at some a little bit off the ball could help to unlock him. I don't know. He hasn't played in summer league. He had a clean-up knee surgery, and it's kept him out of summer league, so we really don't know what he's going to be in any – we have no idea what he's going to be, really.
So you're down there in Vegas, and how much of a bummer is it that it sounds like Zion Williamson is, like, not going to play anymore this summer?
When I saw that notification, I instantly got sad. I was so excited to watch Zion play. He played, obviously, the first game on, I believe it was Friday night, and everyone I've talked to just talked about how wild that night was. And, yeah, the earthquake happened, and he bruised his knee or whatever they're calling it, so he only played 11 minutes. But it was unbelievable what everyone had to say about him. Like, just it was crazy, the atmosphere inside the gym, the warm-ups. It was like something that the Las Vegas Summer League has probably never seen.
It's crazy. And poor Kevin Knox, man, like, it's gonna be like he wasn't even posterized, but it was like it had that play had that same feeling of getting posterized, where a guy just snatches the ball from you and you fall down and then he just dunks. Like, it's, you kind of feel for Kevin Knox a little bit, because it's like, man, that was rough. That was really, really
yeah,
rough.
And I would have liked Zion to, like, make a jump shot or two, but yeah, Stealing the ball from Knox and then instantly dunking it was unbelievable. Like, that was one of the more insane sequences, I'm willing to bet, in the history of the Las Vegas Summer League.
All right. Paul George and Kawhi to the Clippers. You're going to talk to Spencer Davies about this later in the show, but I woke up to that on Saturday morning, and that came out of complete left field, I think, for everybody, because it had seemed like the Clippers were basically out of it and that it was either going to be the Lakers or Kawhi was going to go back to Toronto. And then you pull off this deal for Paul George. The Clippers are giving up a lot in terms of draft capital, but man, that team is going to be something to watch now. I can't wait.
So when that news broke, I was still awake. I was in bed. I was watching The Office on Netflix, and I got the tweet notification from Chris Haynes, said Kawhi Leonard's going to the Clippers. I was like, oh, you know, that's moderately surprising, but I'm not, like, stunned. Like, that right. was the rumor for the past 2 years that Kawhi Leonard was going to go to the Clippers. Like, that's okay. I get that. And then 3 minutes later, when Woj tweets, like, oh my God, this is stunning. This is the Paul George news was some of the most insane NBA news I can ever remember. I was floored at the, like, I was up for another hour and a half because of it, because I couldn't sleep after that. It was insane.
Yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, I woke up to it the next morning, Saturday morning, and I had a very similar reaction that you had, where I saw, you know, because I had the Woj notifications and everything, and the first thing I saw was that he was signing with the Clippers, and I saw the Paul George thing on top of that, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, how is that even going to work? How are they pulling that off? And they did, and that team is going to be a absolute nightmare on the defensive end. They are going to defend the hell out of everybody with Kawhi and Paul George and Patrick Beverly and, you know, Montrezl Harrell. All those guys are good defenders, and it's going to be really, really hard to score on that team.
It's going to be very difficult. They've got, I mean, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are the two best wing defenders, in my opinion, in basketball. Patrick Beverly's a terrific backcourt defender. They're going to be insane. If they have the best defense in the NBA this year, and the only reason I can think of that they might not is they could also be a very load management heavy team, where Kawhi plays 60 games again, Paul George plays 65, and that's going to affect how they look. But if they finish number one defensively, it should surprise zero people, because they're that talented on that end.
and it just makes the West so much more fun. I mean, we've already talked about just how tough it's going to be. It's how tough it's going to be for the Wolves to really, you know, compete in the West on a high level. And you mix that in with the Clippers and, you know, obviously Oklahoma City, this changes everything for them with what they're going to do with Russell Westbrook now going forward. I had somebody tweet at me yesterday about the Wolves maybe going after Russell Westbrook. I just don't see how that makes any sense at all right now.
Well, I mean, that's the hot rumor right now is that Russ is on the market. Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say that's a rumor, but the Wolves are an easy connection to make because they've got a bad contract, too, that matches up with Russ's. But here's my thing about that, and I do talk about this with Spencer in a little bit coming up, that the Wolves have done everything, at least publicly, to try and match up with Karl Anthony Towns' timeline. It's clear that they need backcourt help. Like that is something that they absolutely need. And trying to match up with Karl Anthony Towns' timeline was D'Angelo Russell. That's the perfect match timeline-wise.
Yep.
Russell Westbrook's on the wrong side of 30. You can argue that his contract is worse than Andrew Wiggins because it's more money. His best days are behind him. And at the very least, Wiggins has been a disappointment as a player. At the very least, you can say, okay, but we do think his best days are ahead of him.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about Russ Westbrook. You absolutely cannot.
I mean, Russ is going to make... I think I was listening to the Low Post podcast over the weekend. Him and Zach Lowe and Woj did a podcast together, and I think it was Zach that said Russ is going to make $47 million in the last year of his contract.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure if that's accurate. I think it actually might be $1 billion. Like, that's just how overpaid he's going to be.
I mean, it feels like that, though, right? Like, it's just you think about where he's going to be at age-wise. Who knows how much he's going to decline? I tend to think he's going to decline quite a bit just because of his playing style. And Russ is still a guy that relies heavily on his athleticism to be successful, right? And the older you get, the more your athleticism starts to diminish. And Russ, we already know Russ is not a great outside shooter. If you can't hit jump shots and you're 34, 35 years old and you're not as athletic as you used to be, like, that's just not going to be beneficial for you at all. And I just don't... The other part of this, too, I don't feel like bringing in another guy that has sort of that alpha dog mentality to try and mix that with Cat, it just seems like it would be Jimmy Butler all over again. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to put Cat in that same sort of situation again. And, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe Russ and Cat would get along great, but I just don't see how that would make much sense for a guy that you're trying to build your franchise around.
I'm with you, Manny. I really am. I don't think that it makes a whole ton of sense for the Wolves. I think that they're better off trying to take another swing next summer. I don't think that this will be it.
All right. All right, let's take a break and come back. And you're going to talk with Spencer Davies of Basketball Insiders. You talked to him already. And we'll play that when we come back from break. You're listening to Raised by Wolves.
Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham at the Thomas & Mack Center in Las Vegas, Nevada for Summer League. Joined now by Spencer Davies of Basketball Insiders. What number Summer League for this is you? How many times have you been out here?
Number two. I was here last year. Had a really good time, explored the strip a little, watched the games, obviously, connecting, networking, sure. Same thing this year.
It is like a, I don't want to say a circus, but this is the basketball convention, I think is probably the best way to put it. There is nothing quite like this in basketball where just everyone is here, no one's under any amount of stress. It is like the basketball convention.
I would completely disagree with your second point. There is plenty of stress here, but it is also a good time.
Who's stressed out?
I don't know. People like me that are running up and down.
Okay, you're stressed
out,
but you don't matter. You don't matter. The people that aren't stressed out are the people that are involved with teams, and those are the ones that matter.
Fair. Okay.
You can be stressed out, yeah.
I was going to say, media is a little different.
Sure, we're always stressed out. That's the nature of our job, and these guys here are stressed out for 10 months out of the year. This is kind of when that stress stops. So it's a great place to get to know front office people and stuff like that.
It's really a relaxed environment for them, yes.
Yes, absolutely. Today was day one for me ever at Summer League, and it was an incredible experience. the Wolves play, they beat the Atlanta Hawks. Like, the scores don't matter, the results don't matter. Some guy like Kata Bates-Diop, who I know we both talked to for the Wolves, looked good. Josh Okogie looked good. And there are things like that that are things to build on, but the result doesn't matter. You don't get no one hangs a banner for winning the Las Vegas Summer League, you know?
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. I mean, it's a good time for teammates to bond. It's a good time for them to build camaraderie amongst each other. Mm-hmm. And like you said, when we were talking to them earlier, it seems like the culture around Minnesota is really, really turning into something special. And the guys are really appreciative of the support and want to get going.
Yeah, and now you've watched the Wolves twice. I've been here for one of them. I watched the other game on TV because I'm just sick and watch Summer League games on television. What have your thoughts been of the Summer League squad? Obviously, Jarrett Culver hasn't played as of the time we're recording, which is 9 o'clock West Coast time on Sunday night. So wherever you're at, this is when. So if he plays tomorrow and you're listening to this on Tuesday or Wednesday, that's why. But he hasn't played. What have your thoughts on the rest of that team been so far?
Well, the guys that we just talked about, Kata Bates-Diop, really trying to make that second step the next year. Naz Reid, I think, is a guy who could potentially bring some size, a lot of energy. Working on his jump shot, that's something that he was known for at LSU, but coming in and really trying to earn a spot. He's on that two-way contract.
Yeah.
I think that those two are really the ones that stick out to me. Obviously, Josh Okogie, we know what he can do. He's done it at an NBA level. He's started NBA games, so this isn't really a measuring stick for him, per se.
Sure.
But just to get out there, get some run in, live action, that you cannot replace that.
Yeah, you're right. And I do think one of the interesting things is that the game is obviously slower here in Las Vegas during Summer League than it is during a regular season. Pick any of the 82 games, and the game is slower here. So it's an opportunity to see when it's their year two for them that the game slowed down for them, period, but they look so much better their second go-around in Vegas for Summer League than they did in year one. It's really night and day. And one of the things with that is I also think with those guys, because they should be better, it's probably a chance for them to get leadership experience too.
No doubt. And I think that's what most of the young guys for every team do in Summer League is really try to turn it up vocal leadership, and really demonstrate to the front offices that they can do more than what they're pegged to do. A lot of these guys come into the league as specialists, and this is where they have a chance to show off their versatility. Maybe a guy like Naz Reid, maybe he goes and tries to handle the ball a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a guy like Josh Okogie, like he was saying earlier, works on some of his defensive coverages.
Yeah.
Like just areas that they haven't shown in the past, they can work on. And also, just touch up what they have already been good at in the first place.
And for Okogie, one of the things that I think he did need to work on going into this offseason was obviously his shot. Like, you can't be a 29% three-point shooter and survive as a 3-and-D wing. Like, that's just not good enough. But I think that one other thing he needed to work on was staying under control more often, where his nickname's Nonstop because he's always moving. He always has energy. Like, that's what people call him growing up. That's how he's always been. And you saw that in the NBA last year playing for the Wolves. Like, that was a thing. He never stopped moving. He always brought the energy. He's going to be a great tool for, if it's the Wolves, if it's another team in the future, he's always going to have that throughout his career. But he's been able to kind of tone it back a little bit at Summer League, where he's been able to be under control more often.
Yeah, and if you can use that to your advantage, there's a certain way to put it. So, like Russell Westbrook, for example, we know that he is not good when there's way too much of the Energizer Bunny going straight to the hoop, out of control.
Always 100
miles an hour. Charges, all that stuff. But when he is under control in a sense of pace, when you can harness that and still use it to your advantage, being as quick as you are, being as athletic as you are, then it's something that really is a tool that you can use to your advantage just to blow by guys.
Yeah, and that's something that will be different in the NBA because you won't be able to blow by everyone in the NBA. Like, they're bigger, stronger, faster than the guys here.
Yes,
there's no question about that.
Yes, they are.
There's no doubt that the NBA is such a step up, but it's still good to see them be able to take what they learned in year one or when however many years. I mean, some guys like Jarrett Allen for Brooklyn is in his third year in Summer League, and that's okay. You do see that, but it's good to see some guys take what they already know and bring it to Vegas because it totally changes the games and it makes them look better. And I think the Wolves have been a pretty good example of that so far. Wouldn't you agree?
I would definitely agree. And I like the direction of the team. Just talking to Coach Saunders today, I think there's a really fresh feeling about
it. What are your impressions of him? Because this is, I'm assuming this was your first time meeting him and talking to him. It's not as if, even you're based in Cleveland. When the Wolves were in Cleveland last year, Tom Thibodeau was still the head coach. So I totally understand you've never met Ryan before. This is the first opportunity you've had to experience him. It's different than watching the Wolves play on TV or whatever, listening to him talk in the media. What were your impressions?
The first thing I thought of was player's coach. It seems like he's very laid back, someone who can connect to the younger guys especially. And that, I think, takes you a very far distance just because they trust you. And building trust within a team is huge, especially at this level. I think that he's going to do a solid job there. Obviously, well-renowned, assisting days back in the day.
It's crazy that he's only 33. He's only 33, and he was an assistant coach for 10 years already in the NBA.
Yep, it's in his blood, man.
There's no question about that. Yeah, there's no question about that. And I do think it was a good hire. I think he's going to be a very good head coach. I don't necessarily know that he's in the best situation right now in terms of they're not set up to be overly competitive this year.
And who's on the roster, and obviously all the trade talks surrounding Andrew Wiggins.
And how good the Western Conference is, too.
That's a good point.
Like, the Western Conference is loaded. You could make a case for 13 teams to be potentially a playoff team, and sure, the Wolves could be part of that group, but they could also finish 13th, and you wouldn't surprise me.
I absolutely love that. Just all the parity in the league now.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in a little bit, but I do want to talk a little bit more about the Wolves and then a little bit more about Summer League, because you were here for a couple pretty big events before I got here, and I need your opinion on those two.
All right.
But I also want to ask you about Gerson Rosas, who's the guy in charge. He's now running the show in Minneapolis. As an outsider, what have you picked up on what the Wolves have tried to do so far?
You know, the big goal seemed to have been going after D'Angelo Russell, and that's obviously something that fell through. Which probably isn't exactly what they wanted to happen.
Sure. I would assume that if that was their goal, they wanted it to happen. They didn't.
Yeah, that's right. No need for the snark, okay? I'll say this. The point guard situation still needs addressed.
Yes.
And I think that is going to be their number one goal, whether that's through trade or picking up somebody who's on the market that's maybe, you know, a veteran or something like that, because there's still a few out there.
Sure.
But that would only be a short-term solution.
And I think the assumption that Tyus Jones is probably going to sign his qualifying offer and be back.
Of course.
So that's probably their answer there.
And that's who they should put there. I mean, Jeff Teague's an awesome veteran, a great guy.
In a contract year.
Exactly. But that's going to be valued by another team. He's obviously not part of the long-term picture in Minnesota.
Correct.
Maybe you put him in a package with somebody like, say, Robert Covington. Obviously, Andrew Wiggins is on the block, as we have heard.
Yeah.
So those guys aren't untouchable, and you can still get solid value for that. Maybe you can get a young point guard back in return. Maybe you can go try someone like Miami, who's trying to get rid of like Goran Dragic,
and just recreate the Wolves down there.
Yeah, why not
recreate the Jimmy Butler era Wolves in Miami?
Exactly.
See if warm weather makes them less grumpy.
Exactly. I don't know who they would be able to put together a package for, but Russell Westbrook, as we know, is on the block.
That's the name that's been thrown out, Spencer.
All right, tell me a little more.
Well, I mean, that's the name that's been thrown out there. That's the hot rumor right now, is that Russell Westbrook's going to be traded. Minnesota's a logical place, but here's my qualm about that, I guess I should say, is that everything Rosas has done and talked about has been trying to set this team up on Karl Anthony Towns' timeline, where he's 24, he's young, he's an all-NBA player, he's maybe not the best player on a title-winning team, but who is at this point? Russell Westbrook's going to be 31. Russell Westbrook is going to be making more money than almost anybody in the league. Those timelines don't exactly mesh, and I think that's where the biggest hole comes into play. And even then, would you rather have a young Andrew Wiggins who's making the same amount of money and has potential? Yes, he's come up short throughout his entire career, but he still does have that type of potential.
22, 23 years old, right?
Where Russell Westbrook's on the wrong side of 30. Like, he's not getting better. His best days are behind him, where you can make the case that Wiggins might not have the best of days, but his best days could be in front of him still.
Here's my question, though. So if you're looking for this point guard thing and you're not looking for a stopgap, what young point guard is available that you can go after and that team is willing to give up? Because it puts you in a sticky situation.
It's a good question.
Other places. Terry Rozier might have been the perfect guy, but he's obviously out to Charlotte.
Well, I think that contract's a mistake, too.
Well, I mean, but you know what I'm saying. A guy that is in his young to mid-20s.
Sure.
And you want to be on the timeline that Kat's on, that Wiggins on.
What's D'Angelo Russell. Like, that was
exactly.
That was the resolution. That's what they wanted. He was the guy on the timeline. He's the all-star. He's the one that you could match up with, Towns, where it's not easy to find. They don't come available very often because you don't see situations like Brooklyn very often. Like, that's just not how it typically goes.
How about since Chicago just got Coby White, why don't you give them a call and get Chris Dunn right back? How about that?
I don't think that's what Minnesota wants.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, if Chris Dunn were any good, Coby White wouldn't have been drafted there.
All right.
Chris Dunn's just not a very good basketball player. All right, so Summer League, you were here for Zion Mania. I need you to take me through that night. What was it like inside the Thomas and Mack Center when Zion Williamson, the most heralded prospect in the NBA since 2003 when LeBron James entered the league, what was that night like?
It was standing room only for the audience. It was standing room only for the media.
Okay? Did you have a seat?
I did not.
Nice.
Dude, it was incredible. I don't want to say it was like the NBA Finals,
sure.
But the...
Well, I mean, it's the fact, nothing compares to that in this
the
sport.
The fact that you had... But what I'm saying is, like, it was almost close. Like, people were so intense and involved in seeing this guy. You
like, there
seen
was
the
a real energy. There was a real energy in the arena.
The warm-ups with Zion were crazy. Like, he did a couple of, like, between-the-legs dunks or whatever. You know, Zion things, whatever
sure,
it is.
That humans
and
can't do.
And ooing and aahing all over the place, man. And... I've never seen that kind of environment for an exhibition game
yeah.
when the season isn't even here.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of put me in a, holy crap, that was wild, man. And as you know, the game got interrupted
yeah.
by an earthquake.
That was an interesting experience. That night is going to be one of the more legendary nights in NBA history because it was interrupted by an earthquake. Zion only played 11 minutes, left with an injury. Like, everything that just could kind of go off the rails did.
Yeah, it did. It went a little wrong because now Zion's down. He's done for the Summer League.
Yeah, I'm so bummed.
I'm sure you are.
I'm so bummed that I'm out here for Summer League. It is the summer of Zion, and I don't get to see it.
And as we record this, RJ Barrett's playing at the Thomas and Mack Center.
Yeah, he has not been impressive so far throughout Summer League. I will say, Mitchell Robinson's been awesome for the
Knicks. Oh, I love him.
He's so good.
I love him.
So good.
I love him. Quick note on him. I think that if he actually jumped and tried to hit the scoreboard, he could get it.
Maybe. And I think if he had a point guard that could get him the ball, he'd be a much better offensive threat than he has been for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Like, I think that he could be an absolutely elite-level rim runner. He could be terrific. I am in awe of his game at times.
The way he can block three-point shots just coming from the paint.
He did it to Zion.
Oh, man.
He blocked Zion's three-pointer.
He did it last year at Summer League 2, and I was like, holy crap, this dude can cover some distance.
Yeah, it's really impressive. His wingspan's ridiculous. I think it's 7'4", and I'm not even confident that that's accurate. Like, I feel like it's got to be longer than that.
I love that this turned into a Knicks Loves Fest really quick.
There is no such thing as a Knicks Loves Fest. I like... Mitchell Robinson, and the rest of that franchise seems to be a disaster.
Don't front on my guy Julius Randle. He got paid, and very deservedly so. I'm very happy for him.
But their plan's just not great.
Fair.
I mean, they would have had a good offseason had there been no promises of big-time free agents. Like, their offseason would have looked fine. Oh, the Knicks are doing some okay things. Instead, you strike out on Kevin Durant, you strike out on Kyrie Irving, and even worse, they come to New York, just not your team. And then you end up with Julius Randle and Taj Gibson, who's a fine player and a good locker room guy, and some other guys.
Bobby Portis.
Yeah.
You have.
It could just be so much better.
Reggie Bullock and Wayne Ellington. A lot of good locker room guys. Okay, if they're going to try and make the culture what it is, I mean, there's not a lot of space because positionally it's a mess.
Yeah.
But if you want to build a nice culture within it, sure. I mean, they're trying to keep their flexibility because a lot of those deals, aside from Julius Randle, have team options on them.
Yeah.
So they're going to keep their cap space flexibility.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't quite kill the Knicks offseason as much as other people do. But you're right about the positional thing. What I'm hoping, personally, is just to see Dennis Smith Jr. take another step this year. Just
yeah.
because he seems to be overlooked in all this, and he was a top 10 pick.
You
two
are
years
right
ago.
About him being overlooked. He has kind of been swallowed up by everything that's gone on in New York, whether it's been chasing Durant and Kyrie or whatever else. He has been overlooked there. But what do you think about those two moves that we saw, where Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving both go to the Nets, and the balance of power in the NBA has certainly changed over the past week?
There's a lot of duos now. There's not a lot of trios.
Is the super team dead?
Is it dead? I don't know if it's dead.
Is it sleeping?
This is the first time that we've seen...
It's got to be sleeping then, at least, right?
I wouldn't say it's dormant. I would say that it's taking a nap. Yeah, it's taking a nap.
It's sleeping.
All right, fine. Just a quick nap.
That's a quick nap. That's
fine.
That'll
change again.
But what do you think about the off season that we've seen so far?
Man, it's one of the most wild things that I've seen. I've covered the league for about 4 years now. And it seems that NBA free agency gets crazier by the year.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, something tends to happen every time just because there's so many teams looking to make a splash that it just comes out of nowhere almost. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, the latest one that we saw was the craziest bombshell. I was at dinner with a few of my friends, and we see this bombshell news that Kawhi Leonard's going to the Clippers, right?
See, that I didn't even think that was the bombshell.
No. Well,
that,
here's the thing.
Like, I saw that tweet from Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports who broke the news. I was like, oh, I'm moderately surprised, but, you know, it's okay.
To be followed up.
Yes.
2 minutes later, that Paul George had been traded to the Clippers.
It was a wild three-minute stretch, Spencer.
The entire table. Am I allowed to swear on this or no?
No, this has to be played on the radio.
Okay, well, you can imagine the expletives that came out of our mouth because that was the entire reaction. This is reporters at the table with us and a few of executives like, holy. That was what came out of our mouths when we saw those notifications. And it's just.
Quick side note, I love that everyone gets the same notification at the same time. Like, we all have our Twitter alerts on for Woj. So anytime he tweets, like, I saw in reading his mentions when he's not breaking big news are some of the funniest things. Like, he broke the sign-in trade for Jake Layman to come to the Wolves, and all of the mentions were just like, give us Kawhi news. Like, we don't care about Jake Layman, and it's the funniest thing to see.
Yeah, yeah. People care about the big fish, that's why.
Yeah.
Credit to Chris Haynes, by the way, for breaking that Kawhi Leonard story.
Yeah, I mean, great for him. That's awesome. And I'm very curious what the Western Conference is going to look like at the top. And you can make a case that six teams can look themselves in the mirror in the West and say, we're going to the finals. And you can't necessarily call them liars.
Well, you have people looking at the Lakers and saying, oh, okay, they only have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, they still have really good role players. They signed Danny Green. They pick up Quinn Cook. Okay. You've got some really good guys. Kyle Kuzma is coming into his third year, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a solid team, and their depth is actually a little better than I thought it would be.
And you didn't even say DeMarcus Cousins.
I didn't. I didn't bring up Boogie.
You can't ever say, oh, they only have LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
That's
like,
where
you're
we're
brushing
at now as a society,
like, those
Danny.
Are two top seven players in the world.
Yep.
You can't brush that, oh, they only have LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like,
I've literally seen that.
That is ridiculous.
It's because fans' minds are programmed that you have to have a trio in order to compete for a championship.
And they almost did.
Just because we saw, you know, the dynasty in Golden State, and then you had as good as those Cavs teams were, as good as, you know, the teams before that, like Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics, all a trio, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're convinced that you have to have three stars.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen this year much. No. I don't think that there's a team that has three stars everywhere you look now.
I mean, you can still make the case for Golden State, but those guys are getting older. Clay's going to be hurt. I wouldn't necessarily consider D'Angelo Russell a true star, despite the fact that he was an all-star last year.
He's an all-star. He's not a superstar.
Yes. He's not. He is a distant third member of a big three at best. And, yeah, when Clay's healthy, but I don't know what they're going to be. Like, I have a lot of question marks about Golden State.
I'm curious, but I'm also, like, happily curious because this is
it's exciting. It is as exciting as it's been for quite some time, Spencer. It truly is.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't seen the NBA like this where, like I said, you can name six teams in the West and say they think they're going to the finals and they're not wrong. Like, they could go. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Blazers, the Jazz, the Nuggets. Like, all those teams can be like, we've got a legitimate chance to go to the finals.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And, I mean, parity in the league. There was something about the last, like, 4 years or something. Like, I love the NBA. You got to understand. This is why I do this.
Sure.
I love basketball. I eat, sleep, and breathe. But every time I would mention something about a different team other than Golden State, they're like, why bother watching?
So many friends that are casual sports fans that are like, why should I watch the NBA? We know the outcome. And no, you don't. We just saw that you don't know the outcome.
Exactly. You can't predict injuries. You can't predict trades. You can't predict where people are going to go. And I think what's nice about this year is that you're going to have the casual viewer back.
Yes.
And now that the casual viewer's back, maybe you have a little bit more exposure. Because, I mean, the diehards are always going to watch.
Sure,
we're always going to watch no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Because, truthfully, at least in my opinion, I think this is the best the league has ever been individual talent-wise.
I don't think there's a debate.
Ever.
I don't think
and
that
I
there's
think
a debate.
And I think a lot of that has to do with every team, almost every team, having a G League affiliate.
Partly, yeah. Partly. You can make that case.
Those are really important. You know, there's actually a minor league system. There's player development is the number one focus for almost, you know, over half the league, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's going in a very solid direction, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And then what do you make of the Eastern Conference? Because all of this talk since free agency has been about the West. Like, the Eastern Conference has Philadelphia, who, in my opinion, got better despite losing Jimmy Butler. Like, I think the 76ers are the favorites in the East.
I don't think they're favorites.
Milwaukee has Giannis still. Boston did some stuff that I don't think that they're going to be very good, but they're still interesting. Like, there's a lot going on there, too.
You know, I don't think that Philly's going to be the favorite, per se.
Okay.
But I think it's interesting how their lineup's going to shake out, because they're going to be extremely tall and long now. Mm-hmm. Are you going to play Tobias Harris at the three and play Horford and Embiid at the same time? You're
absolutely
going to stagger them.
You are. And you know you're what you're going to do? You're going to make life almost impossible for Giannis.
And you're going to have, you know, Josh Richardson, who's a lockdown defender and okay shooter at his own. You got younger at that position. I mean, J.J., as we know, J.J. Redick is one of the best veterans in the league that can give you a three off of any screen he wants.
But a defensive liability, which Richardson's not.
Which Richardson changes, exactly.
They got better defensively. They could be the best defensive team in the league next year, and it should surprise no one.
I'm intrigued by a couple of their summer league guys that I've gotten to know the last couple of years, Zaire Smith and Shake Milton.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are going to have more increased roles on this new team. You know, you got a lot of depth there. You got a lot of length, good defense. I do like them a lot. I don't know if I'm going to call them the favorites, though.
I would call them the favorites, in part because we saw Milwaukee lose some things. Malcolm Brogdon's gone, and that does matter. You could make the case he was the second best player on their team for a lot of the season.
I mean, a 40% consistent 3-point
50, 40, 90. He was a 50-40-90
guy. He's an incredibly underrated player.
Yes.
It's because he's not flashy. And I
Correct.
Think that's why he doesn't get that much. He's going to do really well in Indiana.
I think so, too. Pacers intrigue me because I don't know how good they're going to be until Victor Oladipo comes back. But when he gets back, they're probably a top-four team.
They added Jeremy Lamb, too, who also is underrated.
Yes, he's a sneaky good player.
But back to Milwaukee, you had to make Giannis happy by keeping that core together. So you keep
Chris
Middleton.
Well, and
they
signed his brother today.
Yes, they did. You keep that core. You have Chris Middleton back on a big deal. You have Brooke Lopez back on an enormous deal.
And Robin Lopez.
And Robin Lopez with him. Yes. You have to... I don't think... You still have Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who,
so you have your big three still.
But
there
are plenty of questions about Bledsoe.
You lose Nico Mirotic to overseas.
I thought they'd lose him. I didn't think they'd lose him to somewhere else.
Yes.
Like, I thought they'd lose him somewhere inside the NBA.
They lost him to Europe.
Yeah, that surprised me.
Yeah.
I was a little taken aback when I saw that.
Yeah. I'm curious to see if DJ Wilson can do something at the NBA level. But I think that they're going to be just fine. I mean, obviously, they have Giannis. He's the reigning MVP now. You have Boston, I'm not going to say Boston got better, because that would be stupid.
No, I don't think they did. I think
not
necessarily even because of what they did at point guard, but losing Al Horford's going to kill that team defensively.
Huge, 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 huge. And people will see that value right away. But I think it's awesome that they're going to let the kids play now. Okay,
this is where Brad Stevens is going to thrive.
Yes. You have Kemba Walker, okay, now in place of Kyrie Irving. Is he as talented? No, he's not. Is he Kyrie Irving light almost? Sure. Sure. You know, somebody who can knock down the clutch shot, somebody who can knock down threes, step into them, beat anybody off the dribble, entering his very prime. We know that Brad Stevens is a point guard. He is so good at coaching point guards. If you look at Terry Rozier, you look at Kyrie Irving, who played his best defense of his career under Brad Stevens. And now you have Kemba Walker entering that fray. I think that's a match
I would
made
say
in heaven there.
Just about everything Kemba Walker does, though, Kyrie Irving probably does like 12 to 15% better, and that's an issue.
I wouldn't disagree. I wouldn't disagree, but there's also coaching can unlock that next level.
Sure.
Jason Tatum, obviously coming off of a season where he didn't play.
I don't think he played his best. I think you can say he regressed.
He regressed because of his shot selection.
Yes.
He was taking a lot of step in mid-rangers.
He wanted to be Kobe.
Well, he worked out with Kobe
that
summer
that's
beforehand.
That's why I said it.
Yep. And Jaylen Brown, another guy I think who thinks he has something to prove.
Yes.
So I like Boston, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing what Robert Williams can do.
Sure. Time Lord?
Yes, Time Lord. Yeah, because he can jump out of a building. He's athletic as hell. They bring in Enes Kanter, obviously a defensive liability, but we know what he can do and bring on the offensive glass.
He's good.
And what he can do and bring energy-wise.
I do think that his defensive liabilities, while they are prevalent and true, are a tad bit overblown. I don't think he's like the
worst. Just in pick and roll coverages for me.
Like, he's not the worst defender in the league like some people might make him out to be, but he's bad. Like, he's not a good defender either. Like, there's no other way to put it, and I think that that's where they're going to lose the most. They're going to miss Al Horford.
They're
going to
defensively. They'll miss him. They'll miss him.
And even Kemba Walker, for Kyrie Irving not being a good defender, even though he did play his best defense in Boston, Kemba Walker's worse than Kyrie is, in large part because he's smaller.
The Miami Heat are no longer a dark horse. What do you think about that whole thing?
I don't think Miami's very good. I think that Miami's going to be mostly the same thing that they've been. They're going to win 44 to 46 games, and they're going to lose in the first round.
That's 44 to 46 would be an improvement.
Not by much. Not by much. That's what they've been since LeBron left. They've been that same team. They got someone who's good, but he's not really the best player on a team that wins in the playoffs.
They're overachievers for sure. But yeah. We've had this conversation over text. I like Jimmy Butler. I think that he's wanted this number one role for a long time.
Yes, you're
and
right.
Now he's going to get it.
Yeah.
You get rid of Hassan Whiteside. You traded him to Portland, but you also got back a nice valuable piece there. And I think that Bam Adebayo takes that next step.
Sure.
Maybe almost Pascal Siakam-esque.
Wouldn't go that far.
Well, Bam's been working on his ball handling.
Sure.
So I think that they're going to run a little bit him point forward. Justice Winslow, another guy who can take another step. I'm cautiously optimistic about that team. Let's just say that.
I'm not as high on them as you are. I don't think that they're going to be all that. I think that they make the playoffs and they probably lose in the first round. Like, sure. That's just what they're going to be. That's what Jimmy Butler being your best player, in my opinion, probably gets you, which is fine. Like, that's what he wants. If you want to be Miami and you want to compete, you never want to tank and rebuild and you just want to attract stars, fine. This is your holding pattern until you get there, but you better hit a home run the next time you take a swing.
Do you think they go after Russell Westbrook or Bradley Beal?
I would go after Bradley Beal in a heartbeat. I don't think they have the assets to get it done.
They don't.
I don't think that Russell Westbrook makes sense for them because when their cap does open up in 2021 and stars are available, you don't want to have that contract on your books. And it's easy to attract a star when you have a star, and they've got one in Jimmy Butler. So I don't think that they should be doing that. Do you? Do you think they should?
No. So I don't think that Bradley Beal's going anywhere yet.
Me
just
either.
Because
sometime he will, but not now.
Just not now. Yeah, because I feel like they can. I mean, his trade value is.
It's pretty
high.
You
know, I actually had to think about that twice. Maybe it's pretty high right now. Yeah. He's coming off of an All-Star year. Did he make an All-NBA?
I don't think that the Wizards are trading him right now. People want him.
Front office has been adamant about not trading him,
yes.
But if somebody comes out with a knockout of the park deal, then you have no choice.
Yeah, exactly. If you get a motherlode offer, you have to do it.
Russell Westbrook, on the other hand, I'd do it.
I wouldn't.
But would OKC really entertain anything coming?
Well, and here's the complicated thing, because I do think OKC would, but maybe not for Miami, in part because the crown jewel of the trade they got from the Clippers is the unprotected Miami Heat pick. You don't want to make Miami better and hurt your return that you just got from Paul George.
Not at all.
That's an underrated thing.
There's no incentive to do that.
No, none at all. Spencer, thanks for doing this. You've got to run. You've got Knicks availability to get to. You've got Mitchell Robinson to talk to. Thank you, though. Appreciate you being on. Spencer, you can find him on Twitter @SpinDavies. His stuff's all on Basketball Insiders. Thanks a lot.